Welcome to CEO Uncovered, a place where you'll find the stories of proven entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Ashley Henschel.
So welcome to CEO Uncovered. Today we have on Sophie Ash. She has launched festivals, startups, product managed, multiple platinum and Grammy winning awards, managed clients, toured internationally, and started multiple businesses, all without ever working within the walls of a major label. Recognized in September of 2015 by Billboard magazine as one of the 5 music power players to watch in their celebrated 40 Under 40 issue, in October 2016 as an official 40 Under 40 recipient, and in January 2017 for Forbes 30 Under 30 list in their music category. We are so thrilled to have her on and learn about her career journey. So let's welcome Sophie. Hi, Sophie.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here.
I am too. So I want to start with your background. Can you just give us some insight on where you're from and how you got started in music?
Yeah, I'm from New York, proudly. Mm-hmm. I was born and raised there. I've moved a bunch of times, but I get my hustle from my city. I got into music kind of because I wanted to be a vet and I failed chem. And I was not good with blood. I was not good with needles. I couldn't mentally do it. And in high school, I had been part of a program that was happening at UCSD where they were exploring how hip hop would influence the school system. So they followed me and a couple of friends throughout the year, and kind of we had these workshops every week, and we would basically navigate school through the lens of music. And in that process, A.D. Williams, who was running the program, one of his family members was Layla Steinberg, who managed Tupac, and one of his first managers. He lived in her home in Marin City when he wrote The Rose That Grew from Concrete, and she had this program near my high school, and I was in L.A. at this point, called Assemblies in Motion Microphone Sessions. And basically it was a weekly not a neutral territory in LA, meaning like the any gang things need to be put aside. This is a safe space. And she would give a word or an idea every week, and everybody in there would write to it. Or they would do either if it was rapping, singing, performing, whatever. It was mostly songwriters and rappers. So I just would just go as a spectator. So one week it would be grief. Another week it would be happiness, self-love, whatever it is to really like put everybody in the mind space of being an artist and challenging themselves. And these were people of all ages, like from middle school all the way to their 20s and 30s being part of this program. And she's been doing it for years, and she did it with Pac in her house. So as a spectator, it was something that opened my eyes, and I just like really fell in love with the possibility of music being something that mobilizes change. And from that experience, I met the first artist I ever managed. I was 15 at the time. His name was Crazy Cash from Venice, California. And that's kind of how I started. And when I did that, I also sought out an internship. And I would think I was 15 or 16, which is like not really a, you know, they don't really do that, but yeah. I didn't care. I interned at a company called Radical Media. And I worked in the music video department under Dave Myers, who's a prolific video director, and also F. Gary Gray and Chris Milk. They were like repping the greatest music video directors at the time. So Dave wrote me a letter of recommendation for my college, and I got denied from every school except NYU Clive Davis department, and I think Georgia State, and they didn't have a music program. And that's sort of how it happened. Like it was, I didn't think for, NYU was my reach school. I hadn't had a ton of experience in music, but as soon as I got started, I just like went crazy with it. And I really was like, you know, it was something that as soon as the passion was ignited, I just acted on it immediately. And I ended up at NYU Clive Davis Institute. And that's kind of how I got my career started.
Wow, that's insane that you had that opportunity at 15, because like you said, that really doesn't happen nowadays. It's usually you're having internships around 18. So you definitely got a head start.
For sure. And it was just like, I had to kind of always convince the companies that I worked intern for that, like, I won't tell anybody. We could do this under the table. I don't need anything. I just want the experience. So in college, usually you're not allowed by college and all the companies affiliated with schools and programs with interns to intern till you're a junior. Mm-hmm. So I was like, let me just make sure my language is all good. So I was just like, forget that. Like, I went and I just continued to intern from freshman to senior year, mm-hmm. multiple internships at a time. So I was working full time as an intern. I wasn't making money, but right. out of school, I was interning too. So I had a number of internships by the time I left college.
And that's what I wanted to ask you, because as a perception in the music industry that I see is that you work your way up and you start very low, just kind of like in movies or TV, and then you build your way up. Is that kind of the perception that's true in the music industry?
It depends what route you go. So I have never had interest in working at a record label because I don't agree with their business practices. Mm-hmm. So if you work in a corporate system, yes, it's mostly that. Like, you have to pay your dues, you have to start as an assistant. You know, I from my understanding, a lot of the agencies are still that way. You have to work yourself up from the mailroom, mm-hmm. which to me is like a waste of time if somebody's really good at what they do.
Yeah.
So I think in 2023, it's not the same, because mm-hmm. a lot of people don't even need companies to get started. Like, mm-hmm. As long as you're self-determined and you're willing to reach out to people on your own, or you have artists that you want to get involved with, like, you can pave your own lane and create it early. Like, mm-hmm. I was a 15, 16 year old manager. Like, yeah. you know what I mean? So I didn't have to start as an assistant. I found an artist, we had a good energy and shared a vision. And that's how I started mm-hmm. in a role that gets respect within an artist team. Like mm-hmm. the most respect, because I'm the representative of the talent outside of the talent, of course. So I would say, like, yes, but that's if you're doing things the traditional way. And I think personally, to do things the traditional way in music is not the best way to go about doing yeah. things.
For those who don't know, what does a manager do?
So a manager is somebody who represents the artist in all facets of their business. So of course, there's always an advisory role. They're kind of partners in the best scenario, mm-hmm. But they also seek business opportunities. They build brand narratives, which is basically the story behind an artist's vision and their persona, which I think should be as authentic as possible always. And they're the person who sits in meetings and represents the best interests of mm-hmm. the artist. So it's an understanding of who you represent and an understanding of what you are supposed to, what story you want to tell with their career as mm-hmm. a tandem. So there's a number of different avenues that a manager can pursue. So if you're a music manager, it doesn't mean you can't be talking to people in sports for opportunities there. Yeah. It's just about how do you make it make sense for the artist. Mm-hmm. So you're basically the captain of the ship with the artist. So the artist can remain creative and the manager can remain business focused, and they can be left in their space to do what they need to do without having the pressure of everything business and financial and et cetera mm-hmm. involved.
And how many times more than not do you see artists wanting to get involved with those negotiations or business mindset that you're talking about?
A lot more. Mm-hmm. I think that what we've watched in recent years with a lot of these legacy artists getting their masters back and people understanding how little money you make off of streaming, you have to advocate for yourself more than ever. Mm-hmm. So they want to be involved. I find a lot of artists really want to be, not if they're not at the table, they're going to be talking to your manager right after to understand the full scope of things. And I think there's also an understanding that standard is not enough. So a lot of artists, they use leverage to be like, I'm not taking the standard deal. This is what I want. And if you want to work with me, then this is the these are the terms. And obviously, the more leverage you have, the more you're able to throw around those type of demands. But I think that to maintain the integrity of the artist's vision, sometimes you have to sacrifice opportunities that would bring money in order to do something that makes the most sense for what the legacy is that you're trying to pursue. So I see there's more and more pursuit of things that aren't standard by artists. So, and that if you aren't self-reliant, this is not the best place for you to be because you will be taken advantage of.
And I wanted to ask you, based on what you said, when you were 15, you had your first client. After that, what sort of tactics, that might not be the right word, but skill set did you use to build up your client list?
Well, for me, it's always been focused. Like, I'm not somebody who works on volume. It's really about, I can't even describe it. It's just a special fire that I have when I come across certain people where it's like, I got to get involved. And when I was 19 at NYU, my best friend Michael had told me about an artist in his neighborhood named Nipsey Hussle. And I started listening to his music and I fell in love. And I reached out to him on MySpace, and Michael was friends with him and obviously put in a good word as well. But that's how we started our working relationship. And I became a business partner with him when I was a sophomore in college.
Wow.
Just because I was like so compelled by the music, and I really was very honest with him about how much it had affected me, and how it was just for me, the undeniable, the moment I heard him listen, I listened to his music. And for me, the talent that I've aligned myself with on a management perspective has always been about like, it's not a business thing for me. It's just like a calling. It's either there or it's not. People have wanted me to manage them over the years, and I'm saying no more than anything.
And that I wanted to ask you if there's been a pivotal moment in your career that you think has significantly shaped your approach in the music industry.
Definitely meeting Nipsey, because he was always self-reliant from the jump. And what he's known for universally as far as self-reliance and owning your own and protecting yourself and your family and your IP, like he was talking about that when I first met him. So for me, the perspective, that was the most pivotal time in my career ever, because the vision that I have for my career and my life is based on the knowledge that I got being friends and partners with him.
You were recognized by the Billboard and Forbes, which is an insanely remarkable achievement. Do you think what contributed the most to your success in this field, would you have to say?
Well, first, I was both times, I guess all three times, I was nominated on the low by my school. I had no idea. So every time it happened, it was, and to this day, there's like, I don't know, maybe we didn't, maybe we did. But the support of the school was number one. And for me, even after I graduated, I still have a very close relationship with my school, because when I left college, I created curriculums for them. I was teaching assistants for some of my bosses in their school. So for me, it was like the belief by my professors to support what I was building and what I believed in, number one. And number two is I was working for Beyonce. So there's like, you know,
that will do it.
That'll do it.
There it is.
The combination of like that amazing opportunity with Beyonce in all of these amazing groundbreaking projects she was doing, as well as the support of my school and them telling a story that I'm not necessarily comfortable telling myself, because I'm sort of someone who always likes to be in the background and serve people, as opposed to putting myself central in the point of any conversation or photos or anything. It's just the way that I've always done things. The work comes first.
And I have to ask you, and I know a lot of our students are going to be super interested. What exactly was your role and what did you do with Beyonce?
I was her project manager, and I managed her her roster of talent, which included Chloe and Halle, Sophie Beam, and Ingrid. So I was there day to day, and I did road management when they went on tour for the Formation World Tour. So as project manager, I'm sort of like air traffic control. So everything that's delivered to our partners, all the communication with our partners, making sure everything is to spec, that every color is the exact Pantone color, which is basically there's a code for every color that Pantone has in these books. So making sure that those chips are the same pink across the merchandise, across the apparel that was being used on their album cover, like those tiny, tiny details. I have to make sure that everything is A1, organized correctly to the expectation of Beyonce and her creative directors, and make sure that's all delivered on time, perfect, no mistakes, communicating with our partners and making sure that we're ahead of deadlines. Like, I have to make sure every department and partner that we have is being communicated with and delivered to on behalf of Beyonce.
And did you have a team that helped you out? Because
We
that
all were a family. So, we all supported each other. It was a very tight-knit group of people, and it still is to this day. But I worked in the marketing department, and I worked very closely with one of my very close friends, Caleb, who is still at the organization and a very senior level. So we were very much partners in the marketing together, and we it was it was like I said, it was a family. So everything that we did was, to me, like very fun and exciting, and it's amazing to win with your friends. So that dynamic and that energy is, I think, what makes the organization so successful.
And I asked you that because I'm curious to know there's definitely a lot of leadership styles that people embody. Could you pick one that suits you most that you like to put out there?
That's a really good question. I guess what I would say is non-hierarchical, as far as like, my leadership style is everybody's important. Everybody plays a major role in the success of an artist, from an intern to the assistant to the person who cleans the office. Like, I think being a good leader is making everybody feel valuable, because it doesn't happen without everybody being on board and excited and committed to a vision. And to me, that's a great, I've dealt with a lot of different leadership styles, and the music industry is notorious for like cutthroat, and I'm not into that. Like, I just feel like building relationships and making people feel important because they are is like the best way to get people on your side and wanting to contribute to your success.
What advice do you have for young professionals, high school and college level, who are aspiring to make their mark in the music industry, especially those like looking to take an unconventional path like yours?
I would say that if you have friends that are interested in the same type of thing, whether it's music, fashion, whatever, create an organization together and commit to it early. Because if you go back and read all these the histories of these record labels and iconic crews and music, like, it started with friendships, and everybody ended up developing a role towards the organization that they created. So I think like getting involved early and understanding like, if there's somebody as part of your team that's headline, that is your Jay-Z, then everybody needs to figure out who is Dame Dash, who's Biggs, who's Jess Blaze, who are the people who play those roles that elevate the artist to the highest point of their career and success. And I think that you don't need to be a college graduate or highly knowledgeable at early to do that. You've gained the knowledge based on the objective. So I would say that would be number one. Like, don't let your age be a factor in determining your success. So just build a team early and make it a, treat it like a business. Like, and you're going to learn how to make the business, but by starting with everybody adhering to a vision and everybody having a role to making that become a reality, that's number one. Number two, I would say, is in a, as part of that, is work with your friends that you trust, because that's what makes working in any industry fulfilling to me. Like, if we're all committed to a vision and we're friends in pursuing it, I'm enjoying waking up every day to do my job. My partners, Mike and Keys, are a production duo who worked with Nipsey his whole career, and they've executive produced Victory Lap. I've known them for many years. We trust each other. We're friends. They're my brothers. Like, I enjoy doing business with them because we share the same philosophies and we want to see each other win and elevate. And that's the greatest, that's the greatest way to do business. And the other thing that I would say is, like, don't rely on traditional methods of getting what you want out of this industry. For me, I've never applied to a job via a link, via Indeed, LinkedIn. I decided I want to learn from Russell Simmons. I want to learn from Kevin Lyles. I want to learn from Steve Stout. I want to learn from Maverick Carter. Like, these are people I've worked for because I found a way to get to them. 2 Chainz, Cameron, Joe Budden, like all these people that I've had the immense privilege of working with, I sought them out by any means necessary. For 2 Chainz specifically, like, I didn't know how to reach him, so I found out who his management was, and I Googled and Googled until I found an old press release with the contact information and reached out to him cold. So, and they gave me an opportunity. So it's just like, I've decided who I wanted to learn from, and that's how I developed my career. I didn't do it based on opportunities that were presented to me via, here's an internship, here's a job that's looking to hire. I created my own lane.
I think that's so commendable, because right now I see a lot of young professionals who are about to start their career think that you have to go down one path and one path only, and you can't reach out, and it's unprofessional to do so. And I completely think it's the opposite, and you're a living example of that, which is so commendable.
100%. Like, I've literally, like, pulled up on people where I knew they were going to be, and told them, like, with Cameron, I pulled up on him, never met him before, and I was like, we can make money together. And that's how it started.
That's not a bad proposition either. Let's go.
And I think it's all about confidence, and I think it's about it's about delivering on what you're willing to promise. Like, there's a lot of opportunities where I didn't get paid for them, but the effects of an impact of what we did together, or what I contributed to the to that, like, afforded me opportunities where I'm working with, I've worked my way up to working with Jay-Z and Beyonce.
It's not always the money.
Yeah, right. And then and also, like, challenge yourself in different industries too. I worked in sports for a year as Maverick Carter's chief of staff. He's LeBron's business partner. So for a year right before COVID, I was interested in learning about sports, because the inequities in the music industry and the sports industry are very similar. The way that the artists and athletes are treated, the way that ownership is denied to them, how image and likeness wasn't being afforded to them, even though it's their own. Like, I wanted to understand, why are there parallels in this, in these two industries, and how can I bridge them, or how can I contribute to making those things better? So,
but that's true. I never thought about that, how similar they are, because of, and now with college athletes, and that's one of the reasons we started our new program, that they can profit off their name, image, and likeness. There's so many things that come with that that haven't been there in so many years, and it just opens up way more avenues.
Right. And historically in business, like sports and music, artists are taken advantage of, and athletes are taken advantage of. And in the sports industry, if you have an injury, it's done. And in in the music industry, like health insurance doesn't go to the artists. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
These are things that like don't make sense because these are people creating billion-dollar industries. But there's still a lot of racism in, there always has been racism in institutions, and that those structures need to be dismantled. And you don't, you're not able to do that unless you're learning what's going on and challenging the status quo.
Lastly, I always ask this, if you could give a piece of advice to a teenager college version of yourself, what would you tell her today?
I would tell her, that's another great question. I would tell her, take care of herself, because I think a lot of times you can tend to sacrifice your mental and physical well-being in pursuit of what you feel like your calling is. And many times I've had to like be stopped in my tracks by things that started to affect me because the levels of stress I were operating at was just too high. Migraines, anxiety, whatever the case was, you making sure that you're physically and mentally able to compete and also perform is how you get the best out of yourself and the people around you, and making sure that, you know, you have to, even like an athlete, you have to be in peak condition in order to perform. I think that there's a hustle culture, especially when I was growing up in the early 2000s, where like everybody was always quoting Nas, like sleep is the cousin of death. So that was sort of like team no sleep. That was like a badge we wore. I would say in 2023, make sure in the pursuit of the things that you want that you're also taking care of yourself, because at the end of the day, if you're not taken care of, you can't serve the people that you're working with. And just to stay unafraid. I was always unafraid, but I think that's what I would tell myself, like keep being unafraid. This is going to continue to work for you.
I love that. Well, Sophie, thank you so much for coming on CEO Uncovered and sharing your incredible story. And you definitely are one of the best hustlers I've ever had on this podcast and have a
thank
remarkable
so
career.
Much.
So thank you.
Thank you. And if any students want to reach out to me or have any questions, please share my email, and I'm happy to talk to anybody directly if they have any questions or if I can give them some advice.
I definitely will.
Thanks for listening to CEO Uncovered. You can check out more at www.createeveryopportunity.org. Thanks again.